Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios. Say that for my two partners that are here with me today. We're halfway around, almost halfway around the world. We can't say halfway. But Jake Latondras, Ramsey Russell. I have to say this.
Rocky, Ramsey, how are you?
Jake, dude, it's good to have you back. You have been a busy, busy man for about 6 months.
I'm starting to feel it, Rocky, but it is good to be back here, and it's good to hear your voice. And we need to get back in the groove, Bubba.
Hey, Jake, let me tell you something real quick. Yesterday, I was at the Oxford Farm and Ranch, and this guy comes in a full bolt run to me, man. Yeah, you Rocky LaFleur? I said, yes, sir, I am. How you doing? He said, man, listen to every podcast, every single one of them. I said, good, that's awesome. He's going to hear this. Anyway, I listened to every single one of them, man. They're awesome. They're great. He said, but I'm going to tell you something, man, and this is no offense, Ramsey. Best one I ever heard, Jake Latondras' story, The Climb. Man, that thing was awesome.
Well, I'm glad I know I touched somebody.
Anyway, we sat there and talked for probably 5 minutes, and he said, man, that was just an inspirational deal. There were so many people that we've done stories with just right in this area. You figure that I thought he was going to say Ramsey. You know, he kind of had that look on his face like he was about to deliver some bad news, you know, because the story, the burn story, kind of just hit so many people. And I thought that was what he was going to tell me, but he didn't. And because I hear Ramsey a lot, too, but I hear The Climb a lot also. Those are two of the top ones that I hear about, and Pat. But, you know,
let's pat you on the back here, Rocky. Think about how far and how evolved you've become since those stories, and how many people, I mean, you know, those stories really started this snowball effect, and you know, you built that snowball, and you know, as I understand it, you're pretty much worldwide now, bud.
I'll say the same thing, Rocky. I've enjoyed every single podcast series and hung on every word. I listen to them all. I enjoy it, and I appreciate somebody like yourself being able to pull together the depth and the content that to me is a very enjoyable way as compared to a lot of the other podcasts out there. I've just really enjoyed it.
I think the thing that I enjoy about it the most, the reason that I enjoy the story, the podcast series versus the, you know, doing a how-to or just a one-day interview with somebody, that most of the people that we're talking to or dealing with are very successful people. They've gone through a lot of tough times to get where they're at, and they've got a lot of great stories that you know, to tell that got them there. And I love sitting around listening to those. I don't have to sit around and talk the whole podcast. I don't have to be, what's his name, Outkick, the coverage, that guy, you know, he'll sit there and talk for an hour and a half. But I love sitting there listening to people that are successful and how they got there. It drives all of us to want to be the same.
If you think about what we're all doing, Rocky LaFleur, Rusty Grant, Ramsey Russell, Jake LaTondres, we're all telling stories. That's what we do. You're telling stories on your podcast. You're bringing people in that have good stories. And, you know, at the end of the day, everyone has a story. You know, Ramsey travels all over the world, and he tells these people's stories, the people of Azerbaijan, Pakistan, or Australia, or Mexico, whatever it is. And, you know, with my photography and filmmaking, that's my goal, too, is to tell stories. So, you know, I like to say that there's an old cliche in the filmmaking business that, you know, everyone has a story, and the story never ends. So, you know, I guess what we're doing is a testament to that.
Yeah, a wise person told me that everybody has a story. I can't remember who that was.
Mm-hmm. Instagram.
No, Jake LaTondres.
Well, it's true, right? We all have a story.
Oh, it
Everybody
is.
Has a different story, and they're all interesting because even the failure, you know, sometimes the failures are the most. In fact, one time I remember early on in my filming career with Jay Gregory, I missed a big buck on film, and I was just beside myself. And as much as I hate to admit it, at that time and in that immature stage in life that I was in, my biggest concern was that I missed it, that I failed, and like, is he going to show this? Is this going to embarrass me, or did I fail? They're not going to air it because I missed. I was worried about the wrong things. And I remember Jay telling me one time, he said, you know, we're going to air this, and I think you're going to see that sometimes the misses are what people remember the most, and it's not always about being embarrassed about it. It's because people can relate to it because it's real. And that really, you know, that really hit home with me when he told me that.
You are exactly right. I'll say this, at the End of the Line podcast, we got three, and I just announced it this morning. Before we talk a little bit about Azerbaijan, you know, Kate Wood that founded Avery and Drake will be joining us to tell his story, start on it next week. Let me tell you something.
Wow.
Tate doesn't hold anything back. You know, I told Tate, because I'm going to tell you, y'all both know this. Y'all know the whole, the story behind it. A lot of people don't, but
sure.
the when he left Avery, that's a very touchy subject. And I said, Tate, you know, you can tell what you want to tell. That's your business. I'm not going to dig into that scab or that wound. He said,
wow.
Man, I don't give a, I'll tell whatever you ask me. I don't give a, you know what.
I heard that coming out. I said it in my head when you left it blank. that is going to be a freaking, that's the Hiroshima of Duck South, End of the Line podcasts. That is huge.
That guy changed the, I think that guy changed the duck hunting world, For the better, but just changed it forever. With Avery and Drake.
Oh, yeah. Me and Ramsey were just talking in here earlier. There's probably, you know, at one time, there's probably no brand that dominated the waterfowl world ever like Avery did at that time.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, to know he was part of the brainchild behind that is, I mean, I can't wait to hear that one. That's going to be freaking amazing, actually.
Let me ask both of y'all this. Can you imagine walking away from a company that has your dad's namesake on it? I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I asked him this week. I said, Tate, how do you do that? And I think that part of the story is awesome. because he did. He walked away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I'll tell you another one that we're starting next week that I think is going to be off the charts is we're going to be talking to Jeff Foles. What an unbelievable story that is.
Oh,
you know,
Rocky, I've been looking forward to that a lot. I've really been looking forward to hearing that story. You know, you and I talked about it last summer, and I've been anxious for Jeff to come on and just hear the part we all didn't hear. You know, there's always two sides to every story. And I've been really looking forward to that to hearing Jeff.
Wow. Well, those are two back-to-backers there, bud.
Yeah, Jeff, there's a lot more to the story than what you get, what you read in a memo that was sent to the newspapers by the feds. There's a lot more to that story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I bet Jeff ain't holding no punches either, is he?
Woo! I don't know how I'm going to hold either one of these guys back.
Let them roll. Just let them go, buddy. Whatever they say, it's not your fault.
And I guess I'll have to put Josh Reggio in the middle because, you know, Reggio kind of evened both of them out. He's a great story, man. He is flipping the call-making world upside down. Josh Reggio is a good friend of mine and Ramsey's. So that'll be a really cool story.
Josh, Reggio's got a very good story, and I just well, you step into a lot of workshops, and it's just a, you know, organized chaos, and gosh, such precision and such cleanliness. It's like, you know, going to Reggio's like going to an art studio. He takes it that seriously, and it's just to sit there and talk about, you know, whatever, and watch him turn a piece of wood into your call, tune for you from scratch, and it all take place in a, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's just a man been back in for a couple of months, and I get to listen to them all. So I get to get back in my habit and dial back in, and I still got to get caught up on some of these podcasts of yours that have, you know, some of these episodes that have wrapped up in the last few weeks. But I'm truly looking forward to the upcoming weeks. This is going to be very good.
Well, I'll end it with this before we talk about Azerbaijan. Jake, dude, you're the inspiration behind all this. I appreciate it. I mean, you have driven this from a couple of years ago. You know, whenever people ask me, you know, where'd all this come from? Shoot, well, it all came from one quote. Everybody has a story. Jake said that to me, gosh, what was that, 3-4 years ago now, Jake?
Mm,
you just got to ask good questions.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna tap onto that for 1 second if I can get this quote right. Someone said something to me that means the same thing in so many words, and they said, we were talking about mentors, and they said, a good mentor will answer your question with questions to make you answer your own question.
Hmm.
I thought that was good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So, thank you, Jake. You're never able to tell people. A lot of times you go flying off on your own and you're not able to say thank you. So I say thank you. It's all because of you.
Well, I've never looked at it like that, but thank you for saying that.
All right, so let's talk about let me make sure I'm saying this right. Azerbaijan, Brajan, right?
Azerbaijan, yeah, that's it.
Azerbaijan, yeah.
Rocky, you know, there's a lot of people following on social media right now because we're doing these stories and doing these pictures, and when Jake shows up, it just goes through the roof because he's doing it too. And, you know, the number one question asked so far is, where the heck is Azerbaijan? Everybody knows.
I still don't know where it is.
Everybody's kind of sort of heard of it, but where is it? And, you know, I sent a text to Terry Denman this morning because here at this little house we're staying in, on the back door, as you walk out, there's a Mojo decal. And I just find that so interesting that, like a duck, any duck camp around the world, here I am in Azerbaijan, and there's a Mojo Outdoors decal on the back door. And of course, you know, the den's got about 15 or 20 of them laid out. They believe in that product, and they work here. But it's, Denman wrote back, "Where's Azerbaijan?" You know, and, but here we are, killed it, you know, and, I don't remember what all we talked about last week, but I knew getting Jake. I've worked with him in the past. We've talked a lot, and I just knew. I said, man, Jake's going to love this place. And I'll let him speak to that, but I feel like he does. I think he's really getting it. And, you know, like this morning, we got in these little P roads, we went deep off into the marsh, and we're just sitting there kind of balancing, you know, and then each in our own respective boats, and our guides are standing up push poling, and how they knew where to go in the fog and the dark and the winding trails is anybody's guess, but they did. And we got there, and Jake and I were talking about it. Here, you know, here's Ramsey and Jake doing our thing. Here's two Azerbaijani duck guys doing theirs. We don't speak the same language. They're not even vaguely similar. You know the craziest thing, Rocky, the only foreign language I kind of sort of don't really know is Spanish. And why the heck? They'll say, you want something? I'm like, si. Oh, por favor. You know, mm-hmm. That's the only freaking foreign language I know. And they get it. We're sitting there talking to each other in three different languages, and everybody's nodding and doing we're all working together because we're just really just four duck hunters falling in together. That's the craziest thing, man. I'm 6,800 miles from home in a country nobody knows where it exists, talking in a foreign language with guys that are hunting like they did, like we did 150 years ago, and we all just falling together like we've duck hunted together for years because we're all just duck hunters. That's the language I'm trying to, you know, explain it. It's just the duck hunting language. Nobody has to say anything else. You know?
Exactly.
Automatic connection, just because of waterfowl.
Yeah, duck hunters are duck hunters, man. It's just the same. You know, I saw a thread earlier this week. I thought it was on Duck South. It could have been anywhere. I was just scrolling through Facebook when I had some Wi-Fi, and somebody had posted up a YouTube video. Some friends from Pakistan had posted up, you know, Pakistani hunt. And Jake's been to Pakistan. I've been to Pakistan. I went duck hunting. He went hunting sheep and whatnot for somebody. And we both speak fondly of that hunt. We don't like curry on our food anymore, but other than that, we loved Pakistan. We loved the people, the culture, the traditions. And I just, you know, that thread and the way it reverted, the way people were talking about it, and just painting with the broadest brush humanly imaginable, you know, it just, I just remind everybody what something I've learned, and I think guys like Jake have learned, is, you know, the world is so much bigger than our backyard. And just because a guy doesn't talk the same language or hunt with the same state-of-the-art decoys or hunt with the same state-of-the-art gun or anything, I mean, it doesn't make him any less of a duck hunter. There's a universal truth, ubiquity in duck hunting that exists worldwide, and it's awesome to get to see it. Rocky, one of the clients came back yesterday and had a picture of his guy. Now, some of these guys will carry their guns out to the blind with them, and they're not trying to poach your duck or shoot your duck, but hey, they're duck hunters themselves, and I personally appreciate that. And the guy, he took a picture of his guide posing with this shotgun he was shooting, his personal shotgun. And it had to have been 150 years old. It had big rabbit ears, Damascus barrels, and the whole right barrel was completely blown out where they probably shot a modern load in a very old gun. So the guy had him a single shot. You know, and hunting with these little decoys, and homemade sometimes or just scratched up, but just following the fundamentals of duck hunting and going out and doing it, you know, and it's just to me such an awesome experience. It, you know, I just realized what led me here was chasing unicorn type species like red-crested poacher. We're here It was a warm winter. We're here at the very last few days of duck season. A lot of birds have chased away, have gone back north. There's huntable numbers of birds, but not tons of them. We're killing the species this place represents, but not tons of them like last year. And what I've just realized here, this hunt really drove home was, it ain't the species, man. It's the experience. You know, the reward for me had become just the whole process of duck hunting itself. You know.
But hey, Ramsey, before you leave that, before we jump into that, I want to go back to something you were talking about, and I can give you another compliment, Jake. I'm gonna tell you something. On January 30th. You made a post, and I went back and found it. And it goes back to what Ramsey's talking about. We're all, no matter where we are in the world, and I hadn't traveled a lot and hunted like you have, and I sat there and just stared at that photo that you posted on January the 30th. And I guess you were in Pakistan. And it's a, mm-hmm. it's a guide sitting on the side of the mountain. And I mm-hmm. sat there and I just looked at that photo. You know, hunting brings all of us together, no matter where you are. You know, what you look like, it's just amazing the words that can come just from that one photo. I was sitting there looking at that photo when you posted it for, gosh, 15, 20 minutes. And then I was looking at that one that you posted of your guide last week, Ramsey. It all connects us. This little thing we call hunt. This little thing we call hunting.
It's an amazing. I feel bad for the people, particularly in Central Asia. You know, a lot of people call it the Middle East. It's really not. It's Central Asia, but you know, it's places like Azerbaijan, now that I've been here for a few days, and Pakistan and Mongolia and, you know, all the Tajikistan and all these countries. I almost feel sorry for these people because, honestly, they just want us to like them. And you know, you see it all the time and I hear it. And you know, I don't know how deep we want to get into this part of it, but, you know.
I do, because nobody can speak to it more than you and Ramsey.
Well, okay, then I'm going to speak from my heart because, you know, it breaks my heart sometimes because you see the you know, the prejudice and racism going on and the presumptuous racism that goes on. That's what I call it because it's literally opposite of what it really is. These people want us to like them. They want our the economic value of bringing Americans to their country to hunt, but they also want to be like us. They want our clothes, they want our waders, they want our guns, and they can't have it because they're limited as to what they can buy, what their government will allow them to have, and they respect us. And when you go to these countries, they literally treat hunters like kings. And you look at that and you go, man, sometimes where I live, it's not so much the same in the South because, you know, a lot of people hunt and fish down there. That's the culture. But where I live, sometimes you have to be careful what you say and what I wear in certain areas because I feel like people are looking at me, you know, an anti-hunter's going to look at me and it's just got a bad vibe to it. And then you come over here and these people are just, they love us and they want to do us right. They take us and they work their butts off to make sure that we get what we need and we get what we ask for. And it's like, man, this is what it's all about right here, man. It's the experience.
It goes back to what Ramsey was talking about when he was in Mexico. You know, all these assumptions are made when you go out of the country. Am I going to be safe? Man, these people are looking out for you. They want you to come back. They're gonna make sure everything is taken care of.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we
Rocky, they don't judge us. They don't watch CNN. They don't judge us. You know, they're proud to have us here. They're just very proud to have us here. Jake hit the nail on the head. They're so happy to see us. And I asked, I just said, you know, I asked my guy yesterday, I said, you know, ask our host, I said, what do you think? I mean, or politically, because it seems to me that nobody cares. And he shrugged and said, nobody cares, Ramsey. Y'all are duck hunters. Y'all are our guests. No, nobody cares. You know, Azerbaijan is one of the, according to him, one of the most hospitable countries in the world. They don't care if we're French, if we're Italian, if we're Arab Emirates. They're just proud to have us. You know, Southern hospitality kind of speak. I keep trying to make that parallel that I'm 6,800 miles from home and I'm kind of sort of in Greenwood, Mississippi. And it's just very hospitable. The food is very good. The accommodations are great. It's just a wonderful experience, and I hate to see, you know, I keep telling everybody, the world's a lot bigger than your backyard, man. And you know, when I see comments like I saw on some of these threads, I want to say, you know, talk about opening yourself up to be judged as a bigot or as narrow-minded or as stereotyping. You know, boy, think about that. And you know, I don't see that behavior coming out of other cultures and from other people that are directed towards us. I don't see it at all, ever. You know, I've been here for 15 days now, and it's been nothing but just greatness. And I, you know, duck hunting, I've been thinking about it, you know, duck hunting is a lot like baseball. All boils down to the fundamentals. And it's a game of errors. You minimize your errors. You just keep repeating it over and over and over and trying to minimize your errors and put points on the board. But there's so many uncontrollable variables, you know, migration and weather. And I mean, baseball, you know, it's just luck of the draw if you get a bad skip on a line drive or something. I mean, it just happens. But I know what this place is capable of. I'm on my second group this trip, and everybody's loving it. Everybody would come back, and I know I'll be coming back for the foreseeable future. I've got a lot of clients that want to come back over here and experience this, you know, for the adventure, for the off the beaten path, for the chance. I mean, Riker, we shot one red crested poacher in 8 hunting days. One nice drake and two other ones. But I know from having traveled around the world that I am standing in the best duck hole on earth to shoot those birds in the average year. So heck yeah, I'm coming back. You know, it's wonderful. And if yesterday Jake and I went out, I don't remember how many we shot. Jake, we shot, you know, a little over half dozen green winged tails and gadwalls. But you want to talk about a wonderful hunt. It was wonderful. Everything about it.
If you want
to
go back in time. It's a time capsule, isn't it, Ramsey? It's like,
yeah,
it's like
exactly what it is.
You want to go back to 1964? Come here and duck hunt. You know, and it's no different. The language may be different. When everybody's quiet, you know, it's like these people. You know, I know Ramsey wants to get in this. I don't want to steal the thunder on this topic, but you know, there's market hunting. There's you know, these crazy primitive wrapped decoys that they use. There's, you know, horse tail hair rope they use to tie the decoy anchors. I mean, it's hell, it might be 1938.
It's just simple people, Rocky. It's simple people. Even if there were a big box store nearby where they could buy the latest and the greatest, most of these guys couldn't afford it. And they're just using materials, simple materials they've got on hand to deploy the fundamentals of duck hunting. And that, along with persistence, by gosh, they're just killing a lot of ducks. And day in, day out, they're putting birds on. You know, Rocky, you got to understand, look, you know, boy, think about the Arkansas debate this past summer. Too much hunting pressure. Boys and girls, let me tell you something. y'all ain't seen Hunt Pressure. You see this marsh we're hunting. You can't conceive hunting pressure. The season starts sometime in September. It ends on March 10th this year. And these folks are hunting them every day from the time the first duck shows up until the time the last duck leaves. You get it. We're push-pulling in the dark in the mornings, and there's shots. I'm talking 4:30 in the morning, 2 hours before shooting time, before I see the shooting duck. But they're out there at night with decoys, sitting and listening for coots mostly to land in their decoys, flip on their light, boom, shoot it. They're doing that 24/7. The fact that we're even shooting a duck, let alone shooting decoy and birds, it goes to the heart of doing it right. That's just amazing we're not killing dozens of birds. Hey, you want to trigger pull on vacation, let's go to Argentina. But it can be that way at times when the birds are in. And you know, late in the season, last February, we're shooting quite a few more birds and shooting some cool species, but they're decoying because these guys are doing it right. But they're doing it right with materials and technologies from last century.
And I was just going to say,
there's something profoundly rewarding in doing it that way.
The other day, or yesterday, hell, time, I don't even know, time stands still sometimes. The day before yesterday, we got to the first spot. I'm sorry, yesterday, we got to the first spot, or to the first boat launch, and I'm like looking at these P-Rows and this little homemade flat bottom with a 15-horse Yamaha on it. And I said to Randy, I said, man, they need a express mud motor or a mud boat and a gator tail mud motor here. And he goes, first thing he said to me was, man, I don't think so. I think that would ruin it. And I thought about it. And I said, you're right. That would completely ruin this experience and what they have. They don't need none of that. They don't need to change, because that's what's so great about this Azerbaijan hunt. It's a time capsule. It's a message in a bottle, buddy.
Mm-hmm. I can remember when y'all were telling that, you know, when I first started duck hunting, I got my first dozen decoys. Man, as crazy as this may sound, I remember tying weights on with trot line string and having cotton spinels or whatever I could find in the thrown away metal pile at the farm shop.
Mm-hmm.
For a weight.
Mm-hmm. We use railroad spikes.
I've seen it all over here. Just whatever they've got on hand, it's just practical and doesn't cost anything. And the people we hunt with, our operator has got, you know, some nice decoys. I know I brought a bunch of Greenhead Gear poacher decoys over here last year. We continue to bring Mojos every visit. He's got some other nice decoys, but they're the best in town. I mean, they're day in, day out guys. The market hunters, the guides you're contracting with out here, they don't have that at all. I hunted one of the first hunts I went on last week. There were 17 decoys, and 9 or 10 of them floated for the entire hunt. None of them had more than 20% paint, and we shot a bunch of ducks. It was a good gadwalls and mallard decoy. And the head guy, the boss, he knew the word boss. The boss said tomorrow he was going to bring me some good decoys, you know, better decoys. I showed up, and, well, let me put it this way, they all floated. But that's where it began and ended. I mean, that's where the difference began and ended. Those decoys looked like some, you know, 1970 era carry lights, mostly black plastic. But they worked. They worked. They put out nice spreads. And
what was their reaction to the first spinning wing decoy that you ever pulled out?
I don't. Last year I brought. And I hadn't seen that bird boy this year. Adil was his name. Really nice kid and great guy. I really enjoyed hunting with him. But I brought one of the new
king mallards or something over here and put it out in the decoys, and he kept going on and on about it. And I was trying to communicate with him using Google Translator, and it doesn't translate. But you can have one word sentences, yes, no, hungry, you know. So we just kind of hand jived it. And I just kept saying, you know, the host name, you know, we'll talk to him when we get back to camp. I don't know what you're saying. And we got about halfway back. We pushed pole, and I was sitting in a boat. I had shot, man, just a slam. I'd gotten everything. I'd gotten red crested poachers, tufted ducks, Eurasian widgeons, Eurasian teal, ferruginous poachers, everything. It was just everything I'd dreamed of on this hunt. And we were halfway back to the ramp, and he kind of stopped, push pole, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and he started kind of rubbing his thumb over his fingers like money, 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 you know, that universal sign for money. And I go, oh, yeah, here we go. Getting shook down the middle of March by a mean old duck guy who wants my money. And and I just kind of shrugged and said the host name. Well, he pulled a handful of little money out of his pocket and kind of rubbed it like that, like I didn't understand what the universal sign for money was. So I called the host. Unbelievable. I got, you know, 4 bars, 3G out here in the middle of this duck marsh. And he answered and said, hey, see what this guy wants. I think he's wanting money. And he took the phone and handed it back. And the host said, how much money did he offer you? How much money did he hold up? And I told him, he said, well, that's about $4 in United States money. That's every dime he's got. And he's offering to buy that mojo. He don't want money. He wants to buy your mojo. You know, it's not how much money it was worth, Rocky. It was every dime that boy had to his name. He wanted that mojo.
So bad.
I gave it to him.
Like it was, you know? And he knew it was going to change his life, man.
Yeah. I mean, keep your money. You can have it. Golly, boy. You know, I mean, yeah. And they work over here, Rocky. I don't care what you say back home. They work. They work. And it's just a everybody knows me, man. Where they work or not, I'm going to use them. I believe in them. And I'm going to start with them anyway. But they work over here. And, you know, today was a prime example. There wasn't but, for most of the morning, there wasn't but 2 or 3 mile an hour wind. No ripples on the water. Next toy I bring over here is going to be a ripple maker, you know, some sort of splasher, shaker, flash or something on the water. These ducks ain't never seen that. And but just having
they ain't never seen no jerk cord.
Well, jerk cord too, but golly, man, just having to jerk it through that grass and them getting in and out of that T-row going out to fetch ducks, I don't know how that'd work. It could be a cluster. But just having those flashing wings today with no other movement, it gave us some movement that I felt like the birds we shot certainly told, you know, certainly came into them. And that was a big help for us. But yeah, it's a...
I want to mention the truck ride this morning.
Oh, boy, howdy.
I mean, we were... Here's... Let me paint this picture, Rocky. So, me and Ramsey get into what looks like a miniature 1968 Ford Bronco. Smells like one, too. And we pack. The back end of it is about the size of a Kia Metro or whatever. It's a compact car is what it is, in four-wheel drive. With, you know, it's a Russian vehicle. So we pack in there, and I'm fairly comfortable. It's a really small back seat, but I got my camera bag and, you know, my tripod, and it's banging against the window, and Ramsey's up in the front, and we got a driver. So it's dark, it's super foggy, like you can't see 20 yards in front of us. Super foggy, the guy's going 50 miles an hour. And then he stops, turns down this dirt road across this bridge, we cross the river, which, by the way, and incidentally, we're on the border of Iran. We're literally hunting, 10 miles from Iran, okay? So, and this river comes out of Iran. So, cross the river, we go down this dirt road, and I mean, it is just beating me like a freaking donkey getting stung by hornets. I mean, it is just, I'm, you know, bouncing in the back seat, trying to set my cameras, and this and that, and then we stop. I mean, it seems like this road goes on forever. Then we stop and we pick somebody up, and I'm like, well, where is he going to sit? So I had to scoot over, and we cram in the back like clowns in a telephone booth. And here we go, boom, boom, boom. I mean, it's just banging. It is. I'm telling you, it was like being inside of a milkshake shaker. And you know, we finally get to our spot. We're driving through cows, and again, this is super foggy. It's still super dark. We have no idea where we're going, and we're on the Iranian border. And so we finally stop. We get to these two handmade, they're canoes is what they are, but they operate like pirogues. And we step out, and we're in, you know, mud, and I'm just sitting there going, this is insane. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, people that would come here and sign up with Ramsey to come hunt this. They don't know what to expect, and I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, you can't not appreciate this experience. And while we might want our $80,000 Raptors and $80,000 bass boats, we're in this, you know, this mini SUV going down this beat up road that has never seen a road grader. I mean, this is an old, you know, cattle ranching road, and it's like a roller coaster at freaking Disney World, right? And,
yeah.
You know, but when you stop, you just can't, you know, if you've been anywhere, and it just, you don't have to travel the world, but, you know, you go to the swamps of South Louisiana or the big ranches of Nebraska, and you see a culture and you see an experience, and if you can't appreciate where you are and what you're doing and who you're doing it with, then man, something's wrong with you, because, you know, life gets stale sometimes, and when you go do things like this and you see stuff like this and you appreciate and respect the simplicity of it all, not to mention the fact that these people have gone so far out of their way, and they're taking us to their deepest, darkest duck hole that they could possibly find because they want us to succeed, then you know you're in the right place. Where do you kill, you know, two ducks or 50 ducks, whatever. It doesn't even matter.
We're on a, to add to that story, you know, these two boats are sitting in a little dugout ditch. I mean, basically what it was just a little diversion off of the river that was about 10 foot wide, 6 inches deep. And we must have gone a quarter mile just in that. I mean, it was about as wide, got down to the marge, about as wide as the boat is. And, you know, you're thinking, where the heck, you know, is this going to? And then all of a sudden it opens up into this big marsh. And that's where the ducks were. But that's
what's
part of it. Back in the old blogging days, I wrote a blog one time about half the adventure was just getting there. And that's just, you know, you got to just, to enjoy this world and enjoy everything, Rocky, you got to just sometimes just kick back and go along with a ride. It's going to go somewhere good if you let
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Just go along for the ride.
I'll have to admit, though, I saw the P-Row rides in through Instagram stories last week on your Instagram page, Ramsey, and I was thinking about Jake coming over there this week, and I know how protective Jake is of his equipment. And I was like, oh my God, Jake is going to, man, he's going to be holding all his equipment, bear hugging it going in.
Well, you weren't far off the mark. That's for true. That's the truth matter. You weren't far off the mark, but he, you know, it's real doable. The bottom's hard once we get where we're going to, and the staff, the guides are very, very understanding. I mean, they understand without being told what that camera calls. They just understand, and they get everything done just right, and they're very accommodating. It's crazy how Jake, he wanted one of them to come back. Look, knocked a duck down probably 50, 60 yards off in this dog hair thick jungle of grass, 8 foot tall, and man, one of them skiffs took off of that push pole, bailed up in it, and just just as surely as a lab picking up a duck out in a rice field come right back with that duck. And Jake had said something to him, and the guy knew just how to come past Jake and come up to Jake, and I mean, just get some footage. I mean, they get it, man. They just totally get it. And but it's an adventure. That's the whole thing. Is this hunt had the promise of a lot of really cool things, but it's also got the promise of one of the greatest off the beaten path adventures. You know, Rocky, that's just, again, that's really, I think, how as a brand and a business doing what we're doing, that's really one of the big things we've done is somehow find these new adventures and just kind of bring them to the world, you know, bring them to the American market, bring these experiences out of the darkness. And that's, me personally, one of the most rewarding things I do. I love this part of my job.
Hey, speaking of camera guys, I hate to tell y'all this, but Rocky, there's more to this story about filming here than it meets the eye. They, you know, Azerbaijan as a country wouldn't allow me to bring my drone here, so I left it at home. And these people went out of their way to go rent a drone out of the big city, their biggest city, Baku. And unfortunately, but fortunately, there's a guy here that right now that just walked in the door. It's 10:30 at night. This guy just walked through the door. He's the guy that's renting the drone to us for the day tomorrow. So I have to bug out because I want to make sure that this thing is tapped into my software properly so I can fly it, because we only have it for a day. So I'm going to have to sign off to you if you guys don't mind.
No, not at all. I
don't mind.
Business.
Yeah. There's daily folks piling in. So, Rocky, I got to go too.
Hey, Ramsey, before you go, I got to ask you about one thing, okay?
All right.
Give me 2 minutes. Jake, thank you, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, Ramsey, I got to ask you about one post that you made before you go that I thought was priceless, something that you would never see in America. It's the post. I guess you and Jake were going to get some lunch today. And
yeah,
they have the sheep in the pen outside the restaurant.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a restaurant. It's right next. I guess it's the same family, but right next to the restaurant is a meat market. And you know, don't serve pork over here in those kind of meat markets. Now you can go to different bazaars and gourmet restaurants in Baku and find pork, Spanish pork sausage, things of that nature. I bought some to bring up here. Some really good stuff, too. It's like the Spanish pork sausage with walnuts in it. Golly, was that good. But the other day we went to eat lunch. You know, those guys here in town, they cater our meals. They bring them over, and it's so, oh, gosh, the food is so good. If you like that kind of food, and I love it. And it's kind of like eating at Kiefer's all the time, but with a bigger menu. And we pulled up there the other day to eat lunch because we kind of got in out of the field late. And they got this little bitty catch pen, 10 by 10 maybe. And at the time, there were two goats and two sheep. I remember a big old white billy goat. And one of the guys said, "Where's lunch tomorrow?" And we all kind of laughed, kidded. We showed up the next day, and guess what? That big white bite, that big billy goat wasn't in there, and he was hanging up in front of that meat market. And, but yeah, just straight from the pen to the table. And how these guys roll. And, you know, you hadn't seen, you know, you remember like the biblical stories, this part of the world, all the sheep herders, you know, everybody in the Bible was a sheep herder, it seemed like. And I don't know how big this little town we're staying in is. I'd say it's 15,000 or 20,000 people. And, Rocky, you know, out in the country, there's sheep herders, and coming down the road at night, there's sheep just coming down the road with their sheep herder right down the sidewalk, or sheep. And, you know, it's just sheep and goats everywhere. And I love lamb, so I don't have any complaints at all. But yeah, it was just right there. And probably tomorrow we'll eat that lamb. You know, the lamb you saw hanging will probably be on our dinner table tomorrow, if not somebody else's.
Yeah, I mean, it's somebody that's a part of the, you know, raising animals on the farm that's going to slaughter for commercial purposes, it opened my eyes seeing that video. I guess we'll eat that tomorrow. End of table. That was pretty good. Ramsey, great episode. Having Jake on here was a breath of fresh air. I appreciate you getting him on here while he's over there. I appreciate you going in a little bit more depth about what's going on over there. Hey, it's kind of, before I let you go, it's been kind of slow. Is somebody planting corn north of y'all? This whole, is Iran planting corn?
Yeah.
Duck fat?
No, man. I don't believe these birds are eating on agriculture. That marsh is so full of, I've seen two plants, and it's got to be the same genus or very close to it. One of them is Wigeon grass, looks almost exactly like our Wigeon grass, and then another is like a coontail moss. And which of course, one of the principal food sources of gadwalls back home. And so that's what these birds are eating. It's been slow because of the weather, man. It's been slow because of the years. It was slow a lot of places this year. And Mississippi and around the United States and just plenty of places was a less than stellar season, which is not to say it's bad. When you come this far, and I've got clients that are happy and glad to be here and already talking about coming back, it's good. It's a good experience. Oh, yeah. It's a good experience, And anymore, Rocky, if we as duck hunters can't just enjoy duck hunting and take the good with the bad, then what's the whole point? Let's all go take up golf or something.
I agree. Ramsey, thank you again, bud. I really appreciate it. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.